And right now, I am just overjoyed to introduce our speaker. It feels funny to say guest, but we don't get to have him all the time. But David Friedman is family. Not just, you know, writer, songwriter, singer, extraordinaire, just so much, so many gifts that you have brought, not just to Unity of New York, but to the planet that will just be forever and forever. Everyone, get ready. I'm loving this title for David Friedman.
One, two, there I am. Okay, so accentuate the positive. I asked Toni specifically to sing that song, and she learned it for today. I mean, she, you know, pulled it out of her brain. Look at any description of New Thought, and the word positive will most likely present itself in the first sentence. Across the board, New Thought wisdom tells us that since our thoughts create our reality, all we have to do to transform our lives is think positive. Unity often describes itself as a spiritual philosophy for positive living. Books from The Power of Positive Thinking to, this one I love, You Can't Afford to Have a Negative Thought, which seems like a negative thought in itself for some reason, but, but anyway, they've sold millions of copies. We constantly hear phrases like cancel, cancel in relation to a negative thought we might have or, God forbid, voice. Don't be so negative. Release that negative thought. Stop spreading negativity. So many of us spend hours coming up with positive affirmations that we stick on our refrigerator and on our desks and in our bathrooms and on our mirrors and hope that if we banish all other thoughts and only have this positive thought, that our affirmation will come true. There are spiritual philosophies that attribute any negative thoughts that might arise to our evil ego that is out to get us and needs to be ignored or killed off. People talk about God being good and often interpret that as only positive thoughts come from God, while negative ones don't. If God is indeed the creator of everything, where do these other thoughts come from? The devil? Ego? Us? It always interested me, if God created everything, then, you know, God created Adam and Eve, but God had to be the one who sent the snake. Who else would there be? So, we frighten ourselves with the notion that any thought we think creates something that will happen, so we'd better not think negative ones or we'll immediately see upsetting results appear. But try as we might, these negative thoughts keep popping up. It's a nice idea to accentuate the positive. The trouble is, and what I've been working on for years, is we don't seem to be able to do it very well. Often, the more we resist the negative thoughts, the more they seem to persist. So in my years of developing and teaching thought exchange, I tried every way I could think of to get over, under, around my negative thoughts to no avail. So I finally decided to take a different tack. I began wondering if perhaps these negative thoughts had a purpose, had a meaning that could be helpful, had a message that we needed to hear. I like that. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. You know, just don't mess with those negative thoughts. Maybe we need to mess with them. As I explored these new possibilities, I began to realize that these negative thoughts were, in fact, a key to healing our childhood, to coming to terms with our past, and becoming able to live as true, whole, integrated adults with the ability to make choices freely and lead fulfilled, happy lives. So if you've been struggling with your negative thoughts, and who hasn't, I want to speak today about how we can learn to have our negative thoughts, make friends with them, and actually use them to heal wounds that all the positive thinking in the world can't heal. What this does is give us a life of wholeness and completeness. No part of us left out. No part of us to censor or to fear or to suppress. And later this afternoon, I'm going to do a workshop where we can explore ways to actually make this happen in our own lives. So today is about exploring the enlightening, healing, soul-freeing world of negativity. Okay. The first thing we have to understand, if anything in New Thought is to make sense, is that we do not live in the physical world. Our entire life takes place in the world of experience. When something happens in the outside world, the only thing we actually experience are thoughts and sensations within ourselves. The only way we register that anything happened is via thoughts and sensations. Now, I like to say, I cannot prove that you are out there. I know I see you. If I were dreaming, I'd see you. I remember I said that to Kathy Lee Gifford once, and she said, believe me, I'm here. But, but in fact, I have an experience of you, and that's all I have. And people often say, oh, that's very lonely because, you know, there's no one out there. I say, no, you're all in here. You are all being experienced in the only place that anything ever happens. So the only way we ever register anything is via our thoughts and sensations. Thoughts and sensations are non-physical. Something happens. We experience a tingling or a pressure or an emptiness, and we have a thought about what that means. We make up what that means. I just thought of this. This is a diversion, but it's great. Sean and I were moving my father years ago to assisted living, and we were packing him up, and the rabbi came over, ostensibly to say goodbye, but really to see if he could get $1,000 out of my father. So the rabbi is expounding on this, and then Abraham said, blah, 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 and Sean walks in, and the rabbi looks at him and says, I'm not making this up. It's in the Bible. To which Sean said, so the people who made up the Bible made it up. He didn't care for that, and he didn't get the $1,000 either. So, thoughts and sensations are not physical. Something happens, we experience a tingling, a pressure, an emptiness, and we have a thought about what that means. In our world of experience, which is where we live, that's all that happens. We experience everything in the non-physical, invisible world. We have a sensation, and we have a thought. That's it. That's the whole world. The sensations we experience in any given situation, which come unbidden and over which we don't seem to have any control, are based on whatever thought we're deeply holding based on the past, though often we will be aware of the sensation before we're aware of the thought. So, for example, you ask someone out on a date, and they say no. The experience itself has no intrinsic meaning. It doesn't in any way predict the future or say anything about who we are. It also doesn't tell us what the other person is thinking or what is motivating them to say no, even if they tell us. Often when we tell people what we're thinking, we're telling them our interpretation of what we think we're thinking or telling them what we think they might want to hear. So you don't know anything from this experience. If in our earlier life we were taught by parents or circumstances to think we are worthless and thus are holding the basic thought about ourselves, we might have a sinking sensation in our stomach and take on the thought, no one will ever go out with me, I'll be alone for the rest of my life. If, on the other hand, we had experiences early in life where we lost things or were turned down, but were supported and seen and where things turned out well in the end, we might still have that sinking sensation in our stomach, but the thought we take on might be, well, they really missed out on something, or I guess they're not the right one, or something better is probably waiting for me. We also might not even have the sinking sensation in our stomach. There are as many permutations of sensations and thoughts as there are people. So something happens that is intrinsically meaningless. We experience sensations based on the past, which are also meaningless in the present, and we make up stories about what they mean. And it is within this quote-unquote meaning that we hold our thoughts about our past, our present, and our future. And all of this happens only inside of us. Now, contrary to the way it feels, we are not these sensations or thoughts. Who we are is actually a neutral observer of these sensations and thoughts. The observer, like sensations and thoughts, is invisible and not located anywhere in physical space. So who we are is an invisible consciousness being aware of and observing our sensations and thoughts. Any meaning attributed to our sensations and thoughts is not attributed by the observer. It is observed by the observer. We are watching our sensations. We are watching the mind make up things about them. It's the Buddhists like to say, you know, if they say, who are you? You say, I am no one, nothing, nowhere. You are a consciousness. So if you would, close your eyes for a moment and see if you can experience yourself as a neutral, invisible observer located nowhere, experiencing thoughts and sensations rather than being them. Notice any tingling or tightness or comfort or relaxation or hotness or coldness in your body. Notice that you have thoughts rolling around about who you are, about what's going to happen next, about what happened. I'll be quiet for a minute and just see if you can position yourself as the observer of all those things. Okay, so open your eyes. Were you able to do it? Okay. Don't worry if it seems difficult to do this. Even by making the first attempt, you're beginning an awakening that may take some time. When I am aware that I am the observer, I become aware that it's not that I have a tightness in my stomach and that means I can never be a success. I observe a sensation in my stomach, and I observe that I have a thought that I can never be a success. Although this may seem like a tiny adjustment, it is in fact a very powerful, life-changing distinction to make. If we are unaware that we live only in our interior world of experience, and unaware that who we are is an invisible, neutral observer of thoughts and sensations, then we may very well be afraid of many thoughts and sensations, thinking that they define who we are, and thinking that they will make things happen that we don't want to have happen. In fact, and this may be a radical concept to some people, it doesn't matter what happens, since the only place we live is in the invisible world of experience. Many of us live in the illusion that in order to be happy or fulfilled or successful or even okay, we have to achieve something or make something happen. But in fact, what happens has no relationship to our experience, but only, and get this, reveals time and again what we're already thinking. So when we look at what happens, we're looking in a mirror, we're seeing our thoughts and sensations. That's why someone can be a movie star and want to kill himself. Or someone can have no money and have a great sense of contentment. Or someone can live in a tiny studio apartment and think it's the most gorgeous place in the world while someone else lives in a mansion and complains about it all the time. In my show business career, I've met people who've had numerous hit songs but are constantly worried about the future. I've met people who I heard complain that they're overworked and underpaid in jobs in which they're making millions of dollars working only a few hours a week. I've met wildly successful writers who have been distraught that they didn't win this or that award. And conversely, I've met people who are thrilled to be given any opportunity, no matter how small. Mr. Page. People who feel that their families and friends are more important than achievement. People who decide against big careers because they feel that they don't want to ruin their equilibrium. Now, neither of these is better or worse. Often when we hear comparisons like this, we advocate positive thinking or gratitude, but that's not what I'm talking about here. What I'm saying is that when we can observe our thoughts and sensations, instead of trying to adjust to them, run away from them, change them, or control them, we get to see what we're thinking and to be with the sensations and thoughts that we're having. So many of us are only willing to observe sensations we deem comfortable, or we try to get comfortable when we're uncomfortable, and only willing to focus on positive thoughts and try to change the negative ones. This approach not only proves futile most of the time, since the more we try to get rid of or overcome these thoughts and sensations, the more they seem to return, but it robs us of information that is essential to our healing and to our ability to be at peace. It is, in fact, the awareness of these uncomfortable sensations and negative thoughts that gets us in touch with the information we truly need to make sense of our lives and experience ourselves as whole, full, safe, and empowered. So let's really take a look at these negative thoughts and explore what they are, what they aren't, where they come from, what they have to tell us, and what they do and don't mean. In order to do this, let's first take a look at the nature of the universe in which these negative thoughts exist, the invisible experiential world in which we actually live. We live and experience life only in the invisible world as observers of thoughts and sensation. In this world, any sensation can be experienced, any thought can be thought. Thus, anything is possible. No matter what is happening in this moment in time, anything can happen in the next moment. We can have had 1,000 experiences of failure, and those 1,000 experiences of failure do not in any way diminish the possibility that in the next moment we could have an experience of success. We could toss a coin 5,000 times and it could come up heads 5,000 times in a row, and that in no way makes the odds of the next toss being tails any less than the 50-50 it always is. So the truth is that possibilities are always unlimited. They must be. In a recent workshop I took with a great teacher of mine, Nancy Napier, she put it beautifully when she said something to the effect of, "Each moment is nothing more than a point of unlimited possible outcomes." Each moment is nothing more than a point of unlimited possible outcomes. So anything and everything is always possible, no matter what sensations you're having, no matter what thoughts you're thinking. Yes, there are things that will feel painful. There are things we don't want to think. There are things we may think are not possible. There are things we might prefer in the moment over other things. But all this notwithstanding, the truth is, even in all these circumstances, possibilities are always unlimited. Only when we are aware of and living in this truth can we take a good, objective look at our negative thoughts. Now, what is a negative thought? First of all, let's get something straight. A negative thought is not a bad thought. It's a thought, like any other. The word negative, of course, comes from the word negate, and the word negate means to say no to. So negative thoughts are thoughts that say no to something. Here are some things negative thoughts say no to. Negative thoughts can be thoughts we wish we weren't holding, so they say no to a particular possibility. I'll never have this. I'll never succeed. I'll never get this. Negative thoughts can be thoughts that hold in mind the idea that an outcome we don't want is inevitable or at least likely. I will definitely fail. I will definitely not make it on time. Negative thoughts say no to the limitless possibilities that are and must be always present in the universe by saying that certain things are not possible when in truth they must be possible no matter what the circumstances. I haven't found a boyfriend in 2 years, which means I will never find one. I actually had someone say to me that she dated 3 men who turned out to be horrible, which is proof that there are no good men in New York City. That was the thought, and so it seemed perfectly logical. Now, an interesting question would be, is a thought like, this good thing is definitely going to happen, a negative thought? Because it erroneously limits, negates the possibility of anything going the way we don't want it to. So we could say that that positive thought is a negative thought. Anything that limits the infiniteness of the universe. So perhaps we could boil a negative thought down to the idea of a thought that limits possibilities in a way that in our conscious mind we don't wish to have them limited. I say in our conscious mind because in truth, we had darn good reasons for taking on those negative thoughts in our earlier lives. In fact, had we not taken them on, we might not have survived our childhood. So why do we take on negative thoughts? Actually, before we can explore that question, we have to explore the question why we took on negative thoughts, since the root of our negative thoughts lies in our past. In my first book, The Thought Exchange, Overcoming Our Resistance to Living a Sensational Life and Having Sensations, I explored the idea that thoughts generate sensations. We have a thought like, I can go on the stage, and the sensations, at least for me, that come with that thought are a pounding heart, shaking hands, a sinking feeling in my stomach. Based on this, we might exchange the thought, I can go on the stage, for the thought, I can't go on the stage, in order to alleviate the uncomfortable sensations. Of course, if we do this, we won't go on the stage, and thus we won't do the thing we want to do simply because some uncomfortable sensations come with it. I don't know if I told you this story last time, but I was getting an award, and Lucy Arnaz was presenting it to me. And we're backstage pacing the floor because she has to go on and, you know, spend 5 minutes praising me, and then I have to go on, and I have to sing and talk. And she does thought exchange with me, and she stopped, and she said, okay, what are my sensations? My throat is tight, my stomach is churning, and my hands are trembling. And just as she said that, the announcer said, ladies and gentlemen, won't you welcome the one, the only Miss Lucy Arnaz? And she went, I can go out there with that. And and off she went and was charming. So I would never go on a stage if I listened to my sensations, but I don't have to suppress them. I notice what they are, I notice what I think they mean, and I can hold the thought, I can go on the stage. It looks like the sensations we get when we try to go on the stage cause us to have the thought that we can't. But in actuality, it is some deeply held, perhaps unconscious thought that people endanger us, that we will be embarrassed, that we will be hurt, that generates the sensation. Not only does the thought we hold generate the sensation, but the thought generates the way we perceive the sensation. As I pointed out earlier, the sensations themselves don't mean anything. It's our history with the sensations that determine the meaning we assign to them. So whereas a regular citizen might have foot pain and run to the doctor, a ballet dancer who lives with foot pain as part of his or her life often thinks nothing of it. They may not like it or enjoy it, but it comes with the dream they have of dancing. So they go dancing, foot pain, and they go on. Years ago, I heard a 14-year-old R&B singer who was being interviewed on TV, and the interviewer said, you performed live for 35,000 people last night. How did that feel? And the young singer answered, it was terrifying. I loved it. The pounding heart, the buzzing hands, the breathless feeling that many of us get before going on a stage could be perceived as danger, or could be perceived as our heart pumping blood, our lungs taking in air, and our adrenal glands pouring adrenaline into our bloodstream to give us energy we need to perform the task at hand. Same sensations, different perception. When in our childhood or earlier life, now this can be tricky, when in our earlier life a positive I can thought became associated with an uncomfortable sensation, like you said, I can do this, and your mother slapped you across the face and said, no, you can't. The child who has no way of solving the situation and cannot tolerate the uncomfortable sensation will take on what I call a protective, not negative, protective, I can't thought to get away from the uncomfortable sensation. As we grow older, because of our history, we automatically associate the sensation we feel with this particular positive thought as being dangerous. So we unconsciously jump to the protective thought and think it's true. It's a positive thought that causes an uncomfortable sensation and causes us to protect ourselves with a negative thought. Following me? Make sense? So, when someone tells you to think positive or take on an affirmation, you can't, because that positive affirmation is the very thought that brought on the uncomfortable sensation. So we immediately jump back into the protective thought before we know what hit us. Obviously, you can see how frustrating and confusing this is. Every time we move toward holding the thought we wish to hold, the thought we think will give us what we want and make us comfortable, we feel uncomfortable. So we exchange that positive thought for the protective, negative thought and feel more comfortable, except we don't get what we want, since holding a negative thought produces a result, or to be more accurate, an interior experience of the world based on that protective negative thought. So we go back to our positive thought, which immediately causes us to be uncomfortable, at which point we jump to the protective thought, and round and round we go. And we don't seem to be able to hold the positive thought. So our negative thoughts would seem to do such damage in our lives and that they thwart us from getting what we want as adults were actually taken on by us as children as a form of protection. And to give up that protection is to feel uncomfortable. Giving up that protection may get us what we want, but in order to hold the thoughts we wish to hold, we will have to feel the uncomfortable sensations, the uncomfortable, meaningless sensations that go with those thoughts. When we think a positive thought and feel an uncomfortable sensation that comes with it, if we decide we can't tolerate that uncomfortable sensation and we take on a protective thought to get away from it, we may feel more comfortable, but we will not see the result we want. To be perfectly accurate, if we're holding the protective thought, it doesn't matter what result we see. It will be experienced within the protective I can't thought, and we won't be satisfied. That's why people can think I'm not enough, and $400 million and 17,000 awards and stuff, they're still not enough because that's the protective thought they're holding. It's too painful to think I'm enough. It's too dangerous to think I'm enough. If we can stay with the uncomfortable sensations that the positive thought produces, we can hold that positive thought while having the uncomfortable sensation. Turn the positive thought into a belief, a thought that we think is true, and we will experience the thought we wish to experience in the manifestations we see. So, you know, there is not, to my mind, a possibility that there is any real danger in standing up in front of you. Your friends, I've been here a million times. If I passed out on the stage, you'd take me to the hospital. That does not prevent my body from having sensations and my mind from thinking, oh, that means I'm having a stroke. That means they all hate me. But it's not true. It's just history. Again, the particular manifestation is not important as the experience we have of it in the invisible world of experience in which we live. We will experience that manifestation, whatever it is, within the positive thought we are holding. Now, if we follow this information to its logical conclusion, we can see that the taking on of negative or protective thoughts to avoid sensations that we perceive as dangerous is a technique we created as children to cope with sensations that were too hard for a child to cope with. These sensations can be coped with by an adult, but we have associations to them from our history that say we can't cope with them and we have to run from them. So in some way, our original technique of trying to get away from uncomfortable sensations by taking on protective thoughts, negative thoughts dating back to when we were children, is still in play in our adult lives, even though it's not necessary. Many of us spend most of our adult lives trying to get rid of this thinking, to overcome it, to become more secure, to find the right job, the right amount of money, the right amount of success, etc. Always to no avail. The more we try to push the sensations of the child down by taking on positive thoughts, the more the sensations arise, since it's the positive thoughts that are generating them. The more we try to ignore our uncomfortable sensations and negative thoughts, the more they seem to persist. If you think of them as the thoughts and sensations of an unheard, unseen child, this makes sense. If you had a child in front of you who was very upset, what would you do? Would you say, I'm not paying attention to you because you're getting in the way of my career? Would you say, I release you now? would you say, I am affirming that your problem doesn't exist? Of course not. You would embrace the child, listen to what the child has to say, feel what the child is feeling, and be with the child. When you were with what the child was feeling and hearing what the child was thinking, you wouldn't feel swamped in the same way the child feels swamped because you are not a child. The reason the child has the thoughts and sensations he has is because something happened. But the reason the child can't feel better is because the child has not been seen and heard with his or her problem. The child has had no adult who empathized with him or her. The child has had no mirror in which to see him or herself, no adult to verify that what the child is feeling is human, is feelable, is seeable, is bearable. So the child remains stuck in crying, complaining, shutting down, or any number of tactics to try and get the adult within which it lives, but who it is not, to experience it and hear it. There is a child stuck in each of us to varying degrees, of course, depending on our history. That child had disturbing things happen to it. But the interesting thing is, it is not the disturbing things that happened that are causing the pain and stuckness. It's that they were never fully seen and mirrored by a competent adult. We often spend years in therapy blaming our parents for not having been able to empathize with us as children. But the fact is, if we still have an inner child in us who is lost, who is holding protective thoughts, and who has not been seen or heard, it's because we have been treating our inner child in exactly the way our parents treated our inner child. We have been afraid of it, ignoring it, not wanting to feel what it feels or what it thinks, trying to overcome it, treating it as though it's ruining our lives and killing our dreams. So if we and nobody else, it is we and nobody else, who are keeping our inner child firmly in place where he cannot be seen or heard, or she cannot be seen or heard, by ignoring our negative thoughts and uncomfortable sensations. And we are the only ones who can give our inner child what he or she needs. We give the inner child what it needs by feeling what the inner child feels and thinking what the inner child thinks. But when we do this, we do it as the adults we are now. And just as we are able to empathize and take care of a child without being the child ourselves, we are able to take care of our own inner child by thinking what the inner child thinks, negative thoughts, and feeling what the child feels, uncomfortable sensations, while retaining our adult capacity to make the choices we want to make. We are unique in that we have complete access to exactly how the inner child is feeling and thinking. As a child, and I'm sure this is psychological, I used to wish that they would invent a machine so that when you went to the doctor, you'd put your hand on the machine, the doctor would put his hand on the machine and would feel exactly what you felt. You go, oh, that's where the pain is. But that is the capacity that you have to relate to your inner child. In this afternoon's workshop, I'm going to teach you what I call the basic skill, which is a simple series of steps, simple but not easy, as we understand, that you can take to identify and experience the inner child's thoughts and sensations while still holding on to the thoughts you want to hold. The result being that you can have the life you want and heal the inner child. And you can't have the life you want if you don't heal the inner child. You can have a life that looks like the life you want, but you can have the life you want and heal the inner child. And all you have to do that, is think negative thoughts and feel uncomfortable. I don't know about you, but I think, what a relief that I can stop fighting this stuff and actually embrace it, using these negative thoughts for positive purposes and becoming comfortable with being uncomfortable. If you want to learn more about this, come see me this afternoon, 2 o'clock, over on 100th Street at the church. And I have a new book called, strangely enough, The Healing Power of Negative Thoughts and Uncomfortable Sensations. I have it in the back, I'll be in the back later. And I always love being here. It just feels so comfortable, and you know, this place was my first experience with Unity. and led to a lot of wonderful, wonderful things. In fact, most of the wonderful things in my life today. Before I leave, I'm going to sing you a song I wrote for Disney. Thank you. I wrote it for a Disney movie, for Bambi 2. How many people were terrorized by the original Bambi? Bambi 2 also starts with a mother dying again, but then it explores another path. And this song, I was very happy to write. I always say that the wonderful thing about, the challenging thing about Disney is, of course, you have this big corporate, you know, behemoth where you have to pass all sorts of tests and it has to, you know, be a certain way and stuff. But you know that millions of people are going to hear what you write. So I always try and sneak some new thought into my songs. And this song is about the fact that infinite possibility exists no matter what the circumstances. And as you now know, all you have to do to contact that infinite possibility is to be in touch with your negative thoughts and feel uncomfortable.
Under the snow, beneath the frozen streams, there is life. You have to know, when nature sleeps, she dreams. There is life. And the colder the winter, the warmer the spring, the deeper the sorrow, the more our hearts sing. Even when you can't see it inside everything, there is life. After the rain, the sun will reappear. There is life. After the pain, the joy will still be here. There is life. For it's out of the darkness that we learn to see, and out of the silence that songs come to be, and all that we dream of awaits patiently. There is life. Just when you thought that the icy cold would never end, it's spring. Just when you thought that you'd never hear the birds again, they sing. And the rivers will run, and the eagles will soar, and the flowers bloom brighter than ever before. Babies are born, night turns to morning, there are blue skies, and your heart flies. So open your eyes to the beauty all around. There is life. Let it surprise you, the smells, the sights, the sound. There is life. For love and adventure are waiting for you. There's so much to learn and there's so much to do. For now and for always, there's one thing that's true. There is life forever. There is life.
Thank you.
So as we prepare for our meditation, I invite you to take a moment to quiet your mind. Take a deep breath and feel the loving, living presence that is the living spirit within you. Allow the soothing music and uplifting affirmations to center our minds and to rest. In the silence of our innermost beings, we celebrate our connection with God and always express our gratitude for life itself. When we do that, we suspend all fears and worries, and we truly exist in our highest self. As David reminded us, releasing all concerns, we can relax into the infinite and the unconditional love of God. We commune with God in this glorious moment of prayer. Let us focus our mind on God within and be open and receptive to divine wisdom working in and through you. The Spirit of God is the source of all life, the source of all healing. Created in the likeness of God, whole and perfect in every way, we are free to be that expression of God. Be free to what I was meant to be. We abide in divine love and abide in God, and God abides in us. In this awareness of the love, we affirm peace for ourselves and for our world. We envision love in the hearts of all people and allow our personal sense of peace to radiate to all. We choose to live in peace with ourselves, with our families, our community, and our world. And with this, we commit ourselves to living and working in harmony and understanding and respect for ourselves and for others as we pray in the silence.